Welcome to LOI Central. Just millimeters past the touchline and coming into your living room, it's Dan and Johnny.
Hello and welcome. It's episode 21 of LOI Central in association with futureticketing.ie. And what a week for Irish football. Bohemians beating Pauk 2-1. We're going to hear from Keith Long after the game. Dan spoke to him. Dan also got the views from Greece, from the Greek journalistic fraternity, in terms of what was obviously a shock result, David versus Goliath at the Aviva Stadium. Dan has been busy. He was at Roadstone to speak to Joy O'Brien. Really interesting stuff from Joy O'Brien, I have to say. That's a 10-minute interview. We also hear from Alessio Abebe, I heard, of Dundalk v Arnhem in the UEFA Conference League. And what else do we have on the show? I think that's pretty much it, actually, in association with futureticketing.ie. We're going to give away a pizza from Four Star later on in the show. And obviously, we're going to just reflect on what was an amazing night. Dan had a bit of FOMO, wasn't at the game, somewhere in the middle of the west of Ireland. You were in the Aviva Stadium. What was it like? How does it rank among the great European nights that you've been at involving Irish football clubs?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was better than that.
People will notice. Well, you weren't there. I mean, you headed off on holidays to Mayo. You were some tall class Thursday night after the game that you were gonna say to your better half, "No, I'm coming back for the game on Tuesday. I can't miss it. I'm
gone on holiday by mistake." Yeah,
but you know, like, people might notice that we were in the kitchen last week. We're not even in the kitchen this week because you're too tired after your holiday. So really, like, you know.
Bo's, how was the game, Dan? This is nothing Bo's, to do Bo's with my holiday.
But Bo's, you know, performed consistently in Europe, and clearly can't all perform that consistently in our own lives, you know, and that's obviously the issue that we all face. Addison, it was very good. I mean, I sense with Keith Long, and I do mention it to him after, that sort of sense of not wanting to be triumphalist when it is sort of halftime, and they possibly could have brought a better lead, you know, and this was a great European night, but the legacy of it to some degree depends on getting the job done in the second leg.
Yep.
Not exclusively, because listen, the people that were there had a brilliant night. They really enjoyed it. Some of the scenes with the Yes Sir, I Can Boogie song being played. And I just saw some great sort of, like, people locked up for a long time, and just the sort of scenes of people dancing in the stadium and having a great, you know, great time and stuff. And people have, not all just from your typical sort of football supporting demographic either. And there was a real sort of good buzz and vibe around the place. But, you know, you can't just spend your whole time celebrating one-legged victories, you know. And that's obviously the instinct of both will be to want to get it done in the second leg and then really celebrate. I mean, it was interesting in the stadium last night in the press box, you know, there was members of the Bo's technical staff were up, were basically, they had the first row of the press box cordoned off. So you had Derek Pender there, and Philly McMahon was there on a laptop, and other members of the backroom team. We spent the whole game looking through data, and this is what clubs do now. A lot of clubs have advancements in this department, obviously, or certainly the top clubs in this league. They don't necessarily always see it up front, but it was really interesting in the dying stages of the game when Bowes won a couple of free kicks. And you could sense, like, they took one or two of them to the corner flag and then they went for it late on. And when the full-time whistle blew, I actually looked down, and rather than people, like, fans were celebrating the win, we could sort of see the Bowes staff were a bit of, you know, that bit of maybe frustration that they had one or two chances there at the end. And that's the standards you need to set for yourself. So, of course, you get caught up in the exhilaration of it. And I just love those nights. I love these European games. You know, I love when you're playing against a team of consequence. And, you know, it always builds a great, like, social media reaction, and people who don't normally follow it talking about it. And that's all great. And this was a really good night, but I just hope that the legacy of it is cemented by what happens next week. And let's be honest, it's going to be really, really difficult.
It'll be very tough.
Pauk are hugely confident.
Pauk will be
hugely confident of progressing. And, you know, I understand why that would be. And we'll hear a bit from their end of things. I've been sort of dovetailing with a couple of journalists in that time, and Kostas Petrotas, he's from Sports Radio. Metropolis and Thessaloniki. We'll get his views in a second on how it's been received over there. But it was good. What did you miss out the most, Johnny? What was when you were watching on your stream? What was niggling away at you?
I don't work at the Aviva Stadium as a journalist very often. So like when I do get the chance, it's a brilliant view of the game. And like Bowes, like, it just looks so good. Like Bowes in the Aviva Stadium have looked so good. They've scored 8 goals. They hadn't conceded obviously until that goal last night. And Pauk, after, like, I was very worried at start. Pauk were so rattled. One of the memorable moments of the game for me was Breslin demanding the ball off their manager after like 20-25 minutes. And that's just such a sign that there's no inferiority here. Like, we want the ball. We want to be on the front foot. And obviously, I missed like the crack with the Bowes fans after the both of the games. Like, I had a few beers afterwards with them. And it was just like old times. It was lovely to. The weather was great. It was lovely to toast an Irish victory. But this was a massive performance, and I definitely can see them scoring a goal over there. Whether it's enough, we'll see. But I thought defensively they were unbelievably good. You could see they were tiring at the end of the game. But Ali Kootan, like the first half an hour or so against Doodland in the Aviva Stadium, he was unbelievable. He was involved in pretty much everything. And a couple of players that I don't think I've given enough credit for how good they are, Ali Coote and Anton Breslin, who I thought were star players among a star team last night. And it was absolutely fantastic. You know, a lot of people on to me about it that wouldn't necessarily follow the League of Ireland, despite the fact that, you know, I'd fork a tenner to watch the game and it wasn't on TV. And I think that's really, really disappointing, to be honest. That's the one disappointing aspect of it. Because if you put the last thing I say about it is when Rovers played Clove and Bratislava in that game, Bratislava, and we were saying, what's the League of Ireland standard like? You know, after that game, I was kind of wondering, because Rovers were battered there. But apart from Sligo, ever since then, it's been absolutely brilliant. It's been unbelievably good. Best run for League of Ireland teams, essentially, in a long time.
Got a sense of your enthusiasm. It was good to see them compete on their own terms in the sense of how they played. And I mean, they were defensively very good. I mean, and in the sense, but also as well, you have to be conscious, like, you know, you're always going to have let-offs and near misses. I mean, like, Pauk did miss a sitter in the second minute, which wasn't offside.
It wasn't offside.
No, the flag didn't go up.
Oh, wow.
And there was a couple later on that they could have taken as well. I mean, I thought Talbot was excellent. Kieran Kelly was good. Andy Lyons, to me, has got an exceptional chance of having a very good career. And that whole dovetailing with Coop makes perfect sense, because Coop is a winger who likes to cut inside. That allows Lyons to go outside. And I have to say, watching Lyons play at the Aviva isn't hugely different to like Seamus Coleman's style, you know, in terms of how he plays. And he just gives them such a great outlet. You know, Cornwall, Nutmeg, Kagawa at one stage, he was struggling a bit late on. He was replaced. But he can go through it. Like, you know, Keith Buckley was so good. You know, Devoy probably had to be more disciplined off the ball at times. And that's the challenge for him. But you could see his quality when he was on it. Tierney was probably one that, you know, he actually found loads of space and caused problems. But actually, possibly, it was a step up for him in terms of maybe just decision-making.
Some
of
the
strength and physicality. It'll be a great experience for him, I think. Yeah. I think he'll have learned a lot from that. And then, Bert was probably, you know, had his moments, but probably outshone by Coote on this occasion. And Georgie Kelly, I mean, for the first goal, did excellent. And I think definitely, like, Pauk defensively would have given Bowes a lot of encouragement.
Definitely.
In terms of they were just a bit ponderous and lacked composure. Surprisingly lacking composure. The captain, Villarinha, who scored against Rovers 10 years ago when he was a more attacking player. At one point, he was just trying to get everyone to calm down when they were 2-0 down, because it was just one of these where they're under mad pressure. They went through a period where they were just taking shots from everywhere. It was like, this is fantastic for Bowes. This is exactly what you want. But their subs did make a difference.
Big time. That's what would worry me a bit.
Particularly the Bizizwar from Suriname. He just took up positions to cause Bowes a few problems. And
thought he was excellent.
Good ball and header from Oliveira. And look, Pauk are resounding favourites still to go through. I mean, that's true. But what I would say is about Bowes, they've shown they're very good at composing a game plan for these fixtures. I mean, these are far better than Fervar. And there was no home fans at that game last year. But I still think they're capable of going away and concocting a plan that makes them competitive. And even if they concede early, which would be obviously not ideal, but they're not dead. But we'll talk about the second leg next week, because we will have the next show before the second leg. So there's no point going down into preview mode. Just in terms of reflections, though, I did get the view from, as I said, I mentioned earlier, Kostas Petrotas, sports radio in Thessaloniki. And I just asked him to maybe give us a summation of how the game had been received over there, local headlines, what's the general discussion and view on the ground. So here's what he had to say.
The loss of Pauk from Bohemians came to complete a lot of criticism that there is for Greek teams in Europe, because Ike is out from Veles, Aris is out also from Astana. So two from the four teams we had this season in Europe are out of the continue of Conference League. Olympiacos could not manage to win Ludogorets, and Pauk lost from Bohemians, a club that has not full professionals as players. So it's a big problem, especially for Pauk, that this season there is a lot of demand for Pauk to make a very good European success. And when you begin with such a loss, this is a big problem for Luchescu and his players, especially for the coach of Pauk. There is a criticism for using older players. Maybe they say that his influence from the team that won the double in the season 2018-2019, and he is much more than he should be emotionally touched with his players, and this affects his choices for the players. For example, I can give you what my newspaper Metrosport wrote in their front page. It was an awakening cough, what happened yesterday against the Bohemians, and this is, I think, the spirit that fans of Pauk have. The way it, a big reaction in the second game, and especially a reaction in the way Pauk will play, because they won the big win against Bohemians. But the truth is that Bohemians put a lot of, how can I say, not fear, but now Pauk is more concerned about what Bohemians can do in the second game. So really is a big game next Thursday, the 12th of August.
You get the impression, Dan, like this, they just have to go through here. Effectively, this will not be tolerated if they're to, you know, to go out to plucky Bohemians under what appears to be a somewhat eccentric coach as well.
Yeah, and listen, was that Keith Long or the other?
Well, I don't think Long will mind me calling him eccentric, but your man without the socks is a bit on that kind of side as well.
Yeah, and he was very confident the other day in Chescu, like he was in good form in the pre-match presser, and then afterwards he wasn't too magnanimous and was more talking about seeing blood in his eyes.
Mm.
And he might see blood on his floor if he doesn't get through. So that might be
that might be
the concern that he has. And it was interesting just to hear the view there that he is a former coach coming back, and the feeling that he might be too loyal to some of those players. And they did actually just look a bit old at times, you know.
Mm.
And in fairness, some of their subs off the bench gave them a lot more energy. Listen, they are in pre-season, and as was mentioned, the other Greek clubs bombed out of Conference League in pre-season, and that is a massive element. Like, no matter what, no matter what way you look at it,
the heat might be an issue for Bose.
No, that's going to be a challenge. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And like, there's variables there. You can prepare for them as much as possible, but like, Bose have obviously, you know, hit on a formula that's worked for them. They obviously have to go play Waterford at the weekend, and how do you approach that? Because these are such big games for them. And they are young, you know, they are mid-season. For all the stuff about, well, they're not full-time, I mean, look, they effectively are, really, like in terms of training they do and stuff. So I don't think that's like an issue. And I suppose when you go away, like, as much as we talk about Bowes playing on the front foot and stuff like that, I mean, the second leg against Doodlange, they actually sat in a fair bit in the away leg. And obviously there's an element of conserving energy if you operate in a particular way, but Pauk obviously have the quality to make your part in the way that Doodlange wouldn't. But we're veering into preview mode there. It was a great night. As you mentioned, shame it's not on TV. That's generated a lot of discussion and continues to, you know, generate discussion. In fact, listen, well, we're talking about both. I did ask Keith Long a couple of questions after the game in the press conference, and I did ask him about the TV issues. Let's hear what he said, and we can maybe talk about that afterwards.
Can I just ask you, like, what's the mood like in the dressing room after the game? Because I'm sure there's pride, but I sense from you there's just a little bit of disappointment over that concession as well, too. I mean, what is the mood like in there?
I suppose the mood... I'll tell you the truth. Like, the mood is that they're, you know, it's half time. The mood is that, you know, we've done a job tonight. We're disappointed with the goal that we conceded. You know, I suppose it's a good question, because, like, it's hard to, you know, some of the boys are bouncing around the dressing room. Some of the boys are really, really pleased, chuffed. And then, you know, but ultimately, and then you've got, you know, a more experienced level head of group that are, you know, and keeping everybody's feet on the ground. So tonight's over now, really. And our focus, and again, this might sound a little bit boring, or, you know, but it has to shift to Waterford. Like, that's what we said at the end of the game, that it shifts to Waterford on Saturday, because, again, we want more nights like this. We want to be here representing the club again in Europe next season, and it doesn't happen unless our domestic league form is looked after and taken care of. We've got Waterford on Saturday at 2 o'clock down the RSC. They've made significant changes in the off season. They've won the last four games, so that's the message we're pleased with tonight, in terms of the result. Yes, we would have preferred to keep a clean sheet and, you know, gone away with a two goal lead, but we've seen evidence in the performance tonight that we can improve. We'll need to defend moments better than we did tonight. At times, we need to retain possession better than we did at times tonight. We need to be a little bit more clinical in the final third with our final execution of pass in the final third. And we have to capitalise on any opportunity that we'll have away from home. But ultimately, the message in the dressing room has shifted and the focus has shifted. The boys, you know, have come off the pitch. They're full of adrenaline. They're pleased with how they've performed by and large tonight. But like I said, it's now over. We can't dwell on it too much, because we've got an important game on Saturday.
Can I just ask you my last question? Yeah. Like you mentioned, like, these have been very good nights at the Aviva. They've been hugely enjoyable. And I know you're immersed in your own job and your own work, but is there any sense of frustration that these games haven't been shown to a national TV audience? A game like tonight, you know, young Irish players doing their thing on that arena, that it's still ultimately been watched by the people in the stadium and a streaming audience, as opposed to maybe that national showpiece?
I think we all share those frustrations, that it's a great spectacle. I think tonight would have been good value for the licensed player. You'll have to ask the powers to be the question. It's, you know, we don't really concern ourselves too much with that type of stuff. Arguably, you know, as a league, as an association, as a sport, maybe we need to take control of that ourselves a little bit. Maybe it's a resources thing, you know, with the Olympics going on, you know, a lot of investment into the Euros. Maybe it's got to do with the contract with the league in terms of the amount of games played. But it is frustrating. There's no doubt about it. I think you only have to witness Dundalk's run in Europe a couple of seasons back, you know, on their first run when they made it to the Europa League. I think the whole footballing country or nation got behind Dundalk at that time, and were proud of Dundalk and how they performed in Europe. So, unfortunately, you know, the wider sporting public and the wider Irish public had been, you know, denied. This is a nice story for us as a club, and we're very proud of the team and how the club has conducted itself in Europe. And yeah, I suppose it is disappointing that we seem to be, you know, always scrapping for the crumbs and at the big table when it comes to, you know, getting that sort of exposure. It is frustrating. You know, I don't think it would happen if in other sports like GAA or the or rugby, you know, for example, I just don't think it would happen. So yeah, it's, but the powers that be, they've got the questions to answer there. Maybe it's a budget thing, like I said, with the Olympics, the Euros that have been on recently. But it's no real impact on us. We get on with our job. We're like I said, we're immersed in it, but it is, there's no doubt. I think RTE, the national broadcaster, for whatever reason, seems to not fully get behind the game, the professional game of football in this country.
Yeah, I listened to the press conference, Dan. One of the first things he said prior to your question was like, he responded with, well, we haven't won anything. This is only half time, which I thought was, it was a good way of cooling down after, you know, expectations and so forth. But yeah, your questions got him going there. And obviously the TV issue, I mean, it's pretty depressing, it has to be said.
Yeah, listen, it's not straightforward, this, right? I mean, it's, and I don't like when, I've made this point on radio earlier, I don't like when, so you have a great night for the league and it becomes, like, the fallout becomes a bit bitter and rancorous. But yeah, I do understand, like, we all, the two of us, like a lot of League of Ireland fans, you still have this, the ability to be triggered by stuff. As much as you preach calm and stuff, there is that frustration because sometimes you see something and you want more people to see it and to feel what you feel, but you live in a country where that, you know, feeling isn't shared by a lot of people. And I've had countless discussions with people, you know, who've worked in broadcasters and various other sort of positions of influence who I don't think, like, don't want to give the league coverage. I really don't believe that's the case. But I just think, you know, there isn't enough evidence there in terms of viewership at times. But
my the games in Europe do attract
let me continue my point. But this is what I say, and it's frustration. The games in Europe to me are massively important and great showcases. But there's a complication there. So the FEI at the start of the year will do a deal with RTE for the number of games you will show, and it was previously with Air Sport as well. It'll be the same. European games are complex because they sit outside that deal.
Like, yeah,
the FEI will be looking for Airtricity when they're doing a deal. And if it's an Airtricity League game, you can have your branding and you can have sometimes your person presenting the man of the match and stuff like that. The European games are different. Now, I gather there have been times when, you know, they've maybe swapped one or two games out of a deal for it, but it wouldn't be preferred. And to say that European games should be in the deal, I'd love that. That's complicated because you play against, there's too many variables involved, different countries, different rights. So I will just make that point. Now, there's a bit of a back and forth going on between clubs and RTE here about the extent to which they were offered games this year, whether formally or informally. I think at the start of the competition, Bo was indicated to RTE that their games, they wouldn't have any issues with them showing their games. But RTE had a couple of things going on, that they have, the Olympics has taken up a lot of their schedule time. And I think they're tied in commercially to showing that show in the evening time. Hence, they tried to show Shamrock Rovers game against Tuaita tomorrow evening, but they wanted it moved to a 5 o'clock kickoff and Rovers didn't agree to that move. I completely understand why Rovers wouldn't do that because you can't, for the sake of TV, you can't completely upset your schedule and, you know, make it easier for the opposition to fly home and you know, get into their own beds earlier and all this type of thing. And these are big games and it's important, but like, winning is the most important thing. And there are layers to it. Like, RTE have making a policy decision that they're going to prefer the priority is to the champions. And I understand that, but obviously when they end up in the same competition as the other teams and there's a buzz building up around Bowes games. Like, I've seen Irish Women's Internationals recently shown on RTE News Now, even. If you can't show it on RTE2, you know, could there have been a way to the buzz that built up around Bowes, the two previous games at the Aviva, the play in Pauk. I'd like to think that, but rather getting bogged down too much.
It's not so much even like, Bowes, though. Like, the Champions League game should be on RTE. Like, Shamrock Rovers is Slovan Bratislava. That game just, that's got to be, like, every year, it's such a massive game, our Champions League, it's our one team. That game's really got to be on RTE.
No, I know. And I don't disagree with that. There was the clash with the Euros for the first leg. That was always going to be a problem. Second leg, I think, yeah, it was a legacy hanging over from that, not showing the first leg. I'm not, there's RTE would say that they've tried to show all of the Rovers games in some shape or form. You know, the the home leg maybe for the Bratislava, maybe not as explicable on that one. They did want to show the game tomorrow, but Rovers didn't want to move it. But I think like we can get down into, and it annoys me too. I'm not saying I'm not angry about it, like, you know, but I also think there is an element of after Bows win the game, everyone says, I wish that was on telly.
Yeah.
If they'd lost it, sometimes if our team loses heavily, it can suit us to just be glad that it didn't get much focus and shuffle on with things. And what I hope is that the lesson of this year is that like the clubs have performed well in Europe, that at the beginning of next season, when the FEI are talking with, you know, and Jonathan Hill is in there now, and they're having discussions, that they start to look at that stage about, well, can you do X amount of European games? Like, I wonder, is this idea of games at the Aviva, and it's in exceptional circumstances this year, but I think it's been a brilliant showcase for the league. Not every club is going to ever want to play there. Maybe it's a very distinctive Bows thing because it had been so long. But I think what you need is a bit more creativity and imagination around the TV deals and what has been allowed. There is no doubt, and Stephen Bradley has some comments on this that people are going to read in the Thursday morning papers and online or whatever, where he just thinks, his view is that we should forget about these TV companies, that you have to go beg into them or feel as though they're doing you a favour by showing their games. That's paraphrasing his words, but that was the tone of it. And his thing is just play ahead with the streaming and you know, build that. I know the numbers are low, but just build it and let it get better. Now, I'm not sure I agree. I think the national audience is important, but I think it comes back to the authorities in terms of at the start of the year, if RTÉ are doing X amount of games, I think you need to be stronger and say, well, you know, it's great you're doing those games, but there's a 4-month blank in the middle of the season. But there should be a strategy to prioritise showcase games that show the league in the best light, as opposed to filling quotas of games in runs of 4 and 5 weeks at the start of the season and then later in the season. And I mean, if the schedule doesn't work or the league is wrapped up, you end up with a load of crap games on, to be, you know, or certainly games that wouldn't even excite people in the league. And yet you have this bizarre scenario in this country where you can't see games that actually interest people aside it. But I mean, a lot of this, Johnny, comes back to like, I think people in this country love a great story. And after the game, everyone was like, Bows Park was great. But there has to be a demand before it that's really there. Like that really does exist to be there. Like a lot of people, like the streaming figures in the for League of Ireland is low. Like we'll probably have loads of people listening to this show who are fans of the league, may not even pay for LOI TV, who might share their subscriptions and their logins, you know, who don't bother to buy individual, you know, watch some games and, you know, you can watch games from various streams and get around it. Mm. And that actually does have an impact on it. And like, this is, there has to be a degree of balance to some of those points as well, that I do believe that there's an interest out there, but there isn't always the evidence that's shown. And like the streaming figures being low has probably been quite damaging, I think. I know people are screaming and saying, well, the service wasn't very good. And that's also very fair at certain times. The clubs are trying to make it better. But even the clubs trying to make the package better now with like proper commentary and the whole thing, I'm not hearing evidence that like you're going to hear about a massive uptake. So we're in a sort of a difficult balancing act with the whole thing. But I just hope that the results become so consistent that it becomes even more glaring that the games aren't being shown. Like, and that's, these should be events that are prioritized every year, but it's complicated. To be fair,
TV is becoming like less and less relevant in the overall scheme of things. The social media aspect of the goals being shared is massive, like, and clubs can benefit from that. You see Glenn McCauley's goal for Athlone getting massive views that nobody would, like 10 years ago.
But it is to a point though, like, you know, people I still think it's really important to be on TV, and I think
it is, and
RTÉ are a national broadcaster as well, right? I have to say, like, so they do have a degree of responsibility. They are different from a commercial station, and there's a balancing act there. RTÉ can't become a slave to the figures too much, as much as the financial strain. Yeah. But obviously, we do have like other commercial stations, you know, who never come forward for these games, and don't get grief. But the reason they don't do it is they'll say that the numbers and the audience isn't there. Like we absolutely, with this podcast grew out of our sport, right? This podcast, like, spawned from there. So we're probably a bit biased towards them. The coverage on Air Sport was absolutely top class. Really, really good. Put in the dedication to, you know, the League of Ireland coverage that you would like. And like, loads of league fans didn't subscribe to the channel.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah,
so yeah, like,
yeah, absolutely.
You
know, no,
you can have everything handed to you.
Sometimes. Absolutely. I am disappointed that more people don't pay to watch the streaming service. You know, I've actually spent, like, just watching European games alone this week is going to cost me a fair few quid, and has done, but it is what it is. I want to support it as well. It's funny, ironically, though, we'll get Shamrock Rovers now. I did say to a couple of people after the game, when they played in Bratislava, I'm actually glad that wasn't on RT because it wasn't a good night. Since then, Shamrock Rovers obviously produced a brilliant performance in the second leg. And is it Tita, Dan? How am I pronouncing this right?
I'm not sure. It might be Tita, Dara.
Yeah, I even looked at it. I went on to Wikipedia. Juras, the city anyway. But Dan caught up with Joey O'Brien, who'd be one of the veterans of the Rovers team. I think a bit like Dylan Watts, when Joey O'Brien has returned to the Shamrock Rovers team, they've started winning games again. Caught up with them in Rosehone today, ahead of the game Thursday.
Your first start for Bolton. They looked it up last night, and it was a way to Locomotive Plovdiv, yeah, in Bulgaria. Do you remember anything about that?
Yeah, I do, yeah. That was my first start, but obviously I'd made a couple of appearances, like me obviously debut and stuff like that, but the way we are going with the league and all that, the club are going really good at the stage, so obviously the manager wanted to qualify for Europe again, so he was using the squad, and at that stage I made my league debut and my first team debut, and so it was just one of them things. We went over and played them over there. I actually remember going over and sitting on the plane, and I was reading a magazine, and it said that the owner had just been assassinated of this locomotive coming out of a nightclub or something like that, you know. He was taken out, and so it was like, wow. So it obviously went in. The place was a pitch, one of them real old school, I suppose, European sort of stadiums, you know, and it was red hot. Remember, it was red hot, and it went all right, to be fair, for me. Played quite well. I remember the game, Kevin Nolan, I think, came on and scored late doors, you know. We had a bit of quality on the bench, and the boys came on and changed the game, really.
You know the way, like, you go away in these trips, and that's where you maybe spend more time with lads than you train with, sort of, you know, you train together day to day. Now, I know Bolton was probably pre-seasons away, and it was a bit more, but who were the sort of big characters and people you would have looked at that would have set the tone around the group, looked after the fines or whatever it was?
Oh,
the big voices.
Yeah, at that time, you mean, yeah?
Yeah, at that
like,
time.
Yeah, at that time, would have been, obviously, like, Kevin Nolan would have been there. Kevin Nolan was there, Gary Speed, JJ Okocha, Kevin Davis, UC Askeloyne, and them lads, obviously, then, to sort of... I think most dressing rooms are in them sort of environments as well. Sort of like, there's so many mixes of different nationalities and languages, yeah, that you always seem to get, like, say, I wouldn't say a captain of each, that's the wrong word, like, but you know, someone that's really there, and he sort of comes into the sort of, we say, the committee group of the dressing room sort of thing. So you'd have, like, maybe the French speaking lads or something like that, you know, the obvious senior player over there of them that say sort of speaking, and some of them probably wouldn't be fluent in the English, some of them would be, so they're able to sort of communicate any problems or issues that they sort of have. So that's the way the dressing room sort of play out, you know. At that time, as I said, the likes of Kevin Nolan, Gary Speed, Kevin Davis, it was like UC, and we had, like, obviously Ivan Campo, I suppose, the Spanish sort of speaking lads and stuff like that, you know.
Big names, like, Gary Speed was a great character by all accounts, to speak.
Legend, man, you know, great guy, you know, great player. Obviously, when I came through as a young player, getting into the first team dressing room, it's obviously one of them moments you get up to it, and you have these lads that, you mean, you would have grown up. I would have grown up putting Gary Speed into my fancy football team, you know, that, like, sort of thing. And so then you see him, and then it's just like all of them, you know, just all really nice, sound people, like, you know, and would look out for me. I would have played him, obviously, as well. He was playing centre mid at the time, I was a centre mid at the time, so again, you would have been one of these players that picked up on and, bought me my first point of Guinness.
Did he?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, come on, was that just
young lad, we were out on the drinks with the open, and just came up, and he was talking about it. Loved Ireland and all that. That sort of Celtic connection, I suppose, you know, and loved going to Dublin. Obviously, Christmas parties and stuff, we would have went to Dublin a lot on Christmas parties, and as a lot of the teams would do over there, you know. We were just shooting with the breeze, walking through Manchester at one point, and I was just talking about, gosh, I love a Guinness sort of thing. And I said, I've never had a Guinness. Like, you know, at this stage, I may just be 18. And, you know.
Let's say you're 18 anyway.
It was just, he was what? So surprised, man. Right, yeah, come on, bang, went in, had two Guinness. You know,
it's a great memory to have of someone in a way, you know.
Listen, he went on, obviously, in the... remember then, obviously, seeing him when he was manager at Wales, he would have come down to games and stuff like that, you know. Listen, what happened was just, terrible shock and moment. Like, I remember it. I remember being down at West Ham then at the time, dressing room, you know, and I remember coming in after training, and Sam was there, obviously, and at that time, there was a few lads that would have played with Gary, like myself, Kevin Nolan, UC Askelinen was there. And Sam, obviously, I think UC was there. UC hadn't came yet, I don't think. Matty Taylor again, maybe. But yeah, it was just, I remember obviously when the phone call came, it was at that time, it was just shock.
Yeah, listen, just to bring it back to this, I mean, you actually spoke about your trips with Bolton and West Ham, and I know Bolton were probably underdogs to some degree, but you're still I looked at the West Ham fixtures you played, and you would have been a Premier League club going away, and there would have been a sense of all Europa League, and I can imagine there was a bit of that around it. How much did you enjoy going away with an Irish club in Europe now, where they're maybe the biggest games of the season, and I'm sure the trips have a certain energy and a buzz around them because of that?
Oh, 100%. Look, I think you look back at probably the games over the last few years and that, with like in Tala, like, you know, the most attendances, the best atmospheres and stuff like that. And I know it would have been them. I know Dundalk, the game, the 3-2 game and stuff like that. But I mean, brand definitely is there. The Cypriot team is definitely there. You know, the AEK, Stockholm team, AOK, you know. The atmosphere in them games is fantastic. And they're the ones that remember. And as you said, when you go out to them stadiums, stadiums do be fantastic stadiums that you're playing in. So obviously, stuff like that is a step. You know, I'm in the stadiums over here, you know, yourself. So like, when you're going out to them, like, AOK Stockholm, huge stadium, for instance, that was the first experience that I had with an Irish team, you know. So it's great for the lads. No, it's great for everyone. And myself, still playing, you're going to them places. Obvious field the night before, and the night before the European game, when you're in a real top quality stadium, we always feel that the training, the
steps
that little bit more sharpness to it, you know, there's something more of a buzz for the lads and the energy off you, and it's just that little bit more because you're in there and you know you want to impress. It's like, that's why you play football, you know, to play on the biggest stage possible and to impress. And there've been some great nights, but it doesn't really matter once you don't win, if you don't win the game.
Just finally,
that's the most important thing.
Just finally, you've got your analysis. Yeah. I don't want to get you fined. You're considering you run the fine system.
Yeah, no, life do it, so I'll be alright.
But like, there is an opportunity here, like through this champions route. But I know there's a balance between that and not seeming overconfident and not being complacent, which is in any way. But there is a chance for this group, and I'm sure is there a balance in getting the tone right in terms of the preparations when you can see there is an opportunity here compared to, say, you're playing AC Milan. It's probably a different type of vibe around those games.
Yeah, no, what I would say though, that sort of things, we played that Ilves team and the Finnish team, you know, in the round beforehand, and we are probably fancy as the team, and you're probably thinking, Jesus, this crowd, blah blah blah, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, that game went to penalties, went real toss for coin stuff, so you can never know. And that's the thing with this European, and which is great as well, I think, because you're looking at teams, you're doing the analysis, you're looking at them, you're getting the fit. You don't really know until you go out onto that pitch. You seen last night with the result. You don't really know. I'm sure that Pauk probably think, bleeding league, or and where, you know?
Yeah.
And then you never know until the match starts, till the whistle goes. And then, listen, it's just you're having a cut off a team then. And I'm sure we're thinking the same as what they're going. So there's no favourites in it. It's just out there, play the game, have a cut off each other, and hopefully we come out on top, you know?
Yeah, you can take the man out of... is he from Tala? He's kind of that neck of the woods.
No, he's not from Tala. No,
where is he from?
I thought Joey O'Brien is. It's not from Crumlin, Crumlin. General direction.
It's from the general direction of the south of south of the city anyway, but he's never lost his accent. I think it's always a good sign of somebody. That was a great interview, Dan, to be honest. Touching stuff about Gary Speed and just hasn't lost his enthusiasm. You know, I do marvel at players who have played at the Premier League and they're playing at home to Longford or Galway and they're just the same professional and probably still getting a buzz about these European nights.
And listen, every time you do an interview with a Shamrock Rovers player, it feels like Joey O'Brien comes up in it.
Yeah.
He's a massive part of it. in so many ways, you know, to the younger players. He'll downplay it, I think, sometimes, but like even behind the scenes with the 17s, Stephen Bradley was saying today, he sees him as a future coach or manager. And like he is a big part of the club, but take away all that sort of stuff. But his off the field influence, and I mean, he reels off names there. And he's not name dropping, but it's just the life that he's lived. And I think that naturally builds respect for you in the group. More than Anthem, he's still a very good player. And like they're a better team. I mean, he went off in the cup final last year. I think they did their composure. And he remains there, a big steadying influence for them. I think in the closed doors era, we heard him, you know, how important he is in the empty stadium, like his sort of vocal instructions. And I mean, he's 35 and, you know, they've signed very good players, but I still think if everyone is fit and well, he's in the team. And he comes to the fore, I think. And that's what I mind him a bit, I think, with the schedule around certain games, but he comes to the fore because they have a great chance here, Rovers. I mean, let's be clear. The Bowes run is brilliant. I really hope they get through. But if they do, they have to play Hibs or Rijeka from Croatia. It's really difficult. Dock similarly against Vitesse. We'll talk about that game in a minute. If they get through, more than likely place Anderlecht, you know. Whereas from the Rovers' perspective, the champions route, if they could get by this, play the losers of a tie between Ammonia Nicosia and Flora Tallinn.
Yeah.
Now, that's like Nicosia would be tough. I think the preference obviously would be Flora Tallinn to lose. Flora Tallinn look to be around a similar level to Levadia Tallinn and the Dock beat. So, like, this is like everyone's on the Bowes buzz at the moment, and it's been absolutely terrific. But
well,
there's every chance Rovers are the big talking point in a couple of weeks' time. And they were. I saw them last Friday against Pats.
That's what I was going to say. So
they're hitting a level which is good at the moment.
We didn't mention it's a massive top of the table clash. Obviously, wasn't on TV. But you know, this was pretty routine, Dan, I thought, to be honest. And the following on from their recent performances, I think Dylan Watts coming back to the team has just made a ridiculous difference. Really, he was the architect of the three goals. He was very good in Derry in the comeback. This was very worrying if you're a fan of anyone else in the title race, because this was routine. They go into the game in great form. There are no real excuses. They should get the job done. I would have thought over two legs.
Well, yeah. Listen, I think they're doing their best to talk up the opposition, and I'm not sure. I think there's sort of mixed messages about maybe how Toyota maybe might be as strong as the team that won the league. I think Abebe in his press conference for the Dundalk game expressed confidence that Rovers would take them. And just listening to some other people, I think there's a few that tactically are quite good, which is obviously a classic cliche, but does seem to be true. But I think if the feeling seems to be if Rovers can operate with the energy and tempo that they did against Bratislava and even against Pats last week, and that little understanding between Watts and Towell and Andrew and the positions they take up, that they have the ability to really outfox teams in the midfield department and pull them in all different directions. And I think that's where Pats, you know, struggled at times.
It's hard to play against. Open.
They were meant to look very open, and Watts in particular was the key though, because he at times he was deep next to Gary O'Neill. But then at other times he was taking up almost number 10 positions with other players sort of spinning out and leaving space, and the little rotations and movements they have really played towards his he sort of could anticipate them and played to his own strengths, but then became the source of goals for others. And,
I was disappointed in the Inter Milan AC Milan game last year that he wasn't brought on a lot earlier, because I do really like watching Dylan Watts playing against like good opposition and looking forward to seeing him in Europe. You do have a pizza question, and somewhat vaguely related to the conversation we've had.
Well, it is, because you heard Joey O'Brien reference Sam, as in Big Sam Allardyce. So the question is...
To win a four-star pizza.
To win a four-star pizza. And we know Big Sam managing the League of Ireland. But what club did he manage? But the key point is here, folks, they need the full name of the club. Because obviously the city that he managed in, the club has had different incarnations. We need the name, the full name of the club that he managed to win a League of Ireland First Division title, I believe, in 1992. We won't be accepting one-word answers for that, put it that way. Who did win the pizza last week? One of your acolytes or someone else?
No, the pizza last week. Last week seems like a long time ago, Dan, and I'm not going to lie.
That's basically what you're saying. You don't know
I can't remember. I cannot remember. So, Dundalk are also in action now.
Well, this is a look. We're actually looking ahead here. You know, this is the thing. Like, we're looking ahead. So much has happened since the last show. By the way, Lorcan Kerry.
Well done to Lorcan.
The pizza, by the way. So there we go. Just so we remember. Well done to Lorcan. We actually, since we've talked about Bowes Park, I mean, Bowes did land was last Thursday. Which was a great night because it followed on from being in the Aviva, watching the last few minutes of Dundalk. I watched all of the game pretty much.
A pass from McAlenny.
Dundalk Livadia, yeah. And it was great. There was just, the goal was brilliant on every level. You had Zahibo coming on in the 90th minute. And just running on and causing a bit of pressure. McElhenney's brilliantly weighted first time pass and patching, just taking it and bam. And it was so clinical. It's the type of thing that you see done to Irish clubs sometimes in Europe, as opposed to being the ones delivering it. And it was one of those, like, the dog went behind early, and I was actually, I have to admit, I was worried what would happen if they fell behind. But it was really impressive how the dog responded. And I think a key theme of the week is, if you have good midfield players in your team, you know, keeping the ball in Europe makes life a lot easier for you. Having spent years of watching teams try to get through European games without having the ball, you can get you so far, but often it doesn't get you far enough. And the first half of the game, I thought Dundalk were very good. Maybe dropped off a small bit in the second half, but I just thought it was a really sort of mature European performance from them. And Vinny's done a very good job there. I think you have to accept, you know, people have to give him some praise, because you know the window was again passed without him being able to bring anyone in. He basically works with the hand that he's been given. Very expensive hand,
yeah.
But a flawed one in terms of the balance of the squad, and with a couple of injuries. And I think they've drained pretty much everything they could have drained out of the last month. And they go to play Vitesse Arnhem now. Like, it is worth acknowledging that, like, they did get through that tie without Michael Duffy, who is their most important player, probably their most irreplaceable player, in the sense that they had to change how they played and change their shape completely, you know, to go to that diamond, and you know, because they didn't have a Duffy replacement. And he comes back for this game. They kind of hope that Vitesse haven't done their homework and they watched the Livadia games, and that Duffy, like, is, I'd imagine they'd be a bit more professional than that, Vitesse, in their approach. But they've as I said, they've got the maximum out of this run, and you sort of see what happens now. I just hope they can bring the tie back. But again, it is a thing where, like these teams are in pre-season, Vitesse again. You saw Feyenoord last week struggling. So you, there's an element of trying to catch them cold at this time. And I was reading that James Rodgers is over there and just following some of the team news. Seems like they're playing a left back, I think, at right back. And just hoping these little things that the dog can exploit, the little margins they can find. But it was a very good win for them, I think.
Indeed,
it's been lost a bit in the other stuff, but
indeed, it was great to watch. I think I spoke about this before. Patching and McElhenney playing together, it's very, very enjoyable. Alessio Abebe, obviously the keeper, who's I think definitely improved as well under Vinny Perth. He spoke to me just at the press conference earlier in the week. Now, the first question, which wasn't actually asked by me, just referenced the fact that he's Italian, and obviously he was brought in by Italians who are no longer there.
Listen, I've heard this question a lot of times, to be fair, and like, I don't like this kind of questions, because it seems like I came here because I'm Italian, and so Filippo and Giuseppe were my friends. Not like this. They signed me as a professional goalkeeper. I'm here as a professional player, so I'm not linked with them. I'm here to play football with them. I was happy with them, of course, because even the communication was easier. But still, I had Jim after them. Now I have Vinny. I've played for myself first, then for Dundalk, and then for the manager, whoever he is. So doesn't really make a difference for me. The important is, as I say, to work, to grow up, and to get results. That's all.
I think maybe something to be noticeable in the games as Europe has progressed, your distribution has kind of improved a lot. You seem to be a lot more confident playing maybe longer passes out to your kind of back two wing players, and also into midfield.
Yeah, I think this was the same before as well, but it changed the way we are playing. Before, maybe we had a period that we don't really fund this this kind of playing, like with wingers and everything, was more like just kick the ball and maybe play with second balls. But now Vini gave us different instruction to me first. So I'm trying to do what Vini asks. So if I have to play with wingers, I play with them, fullbacks and everything. We try to keep the ball as more as possible. So I have an important part to do this as a goalkeeper. So I just try to do what we're trying during the training and what Vini wants. But I repeat, it's not like growing up today for tomorrow. It's something that you have to do in togetherness with the team. So if before our styles was different, I can't just keep giving the ball to the center half or the winger if this is not our way to play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you mentioned Vini quite a bit there. What did you expect before Vini came in? What did you expect from the other players, and how has it worked out for you under Vini?
No, I didn't know Vini at all, of course, but I knew his history for the club, for Dundal. I know all the important things he did before, and to be fair, he keep doing a lot of important things even outside the field. You can see how much he cares about this club, about the thing that he wants us to be treated the good, like, of course, with as better as possible. So I didn't expect nothing, but now I can see and I can tell that is a very important part of this club.
And just finally, what have you made of the way Dundalk have been playing the last few weeks, particularly, I suppose, Patching and McElhenney? And what do you think of the standard of the footballers in this team going into the game against Vitesse?
Well, I think we showed to everybody we have a lot of quality in our midfield. As you said, with Patching, gave us more quality as well. Patrick McElhenney, but even the players like Greg Sloggett and Sam Stanton that maybe have different job to do, but still they a team that everybody knows that we have quality.
Yeah, so that was Alessio Abebe. I think it's going to be interesting. The last time Dundalk played in Holland, we were both there, Alkmaar. What a night that was. On this day as well, this day as we're recording on Wednesday, in 2004, Shells beat Hajduk Split 2-0. And I think last night's win by Bowes was definitely up there with a night like that. And it wouldn't be far off if Dundalk were to go and get a result in Vitesse. So it's happening. It's a great time of year to be League of Ireland. Yeah. Fan.
It would be it's a great time for anniversaries because we had the Dundalk Bate 5-year anniversary the other day. Abebe, by the way, he's Italian born, but he's Albanian. I don't think he identifies that way. So he's not just Italian, but
indeed.
I think it is like Shell's Hydrock. I don't know though. Like, these anniversaries are great, but like in some ways it still frustrates me that like we look back at them as great nights, but the legacy they left is great memories rather than a platform for sustained growth. So like we can have like good results every so often and they're great, but obviously you need to back it up. Like one of the best things about this year is that it is the best set of results that Ireland have had since 2016. And as a result, that big slide down the European rankings that was coming, because you lose 2016 from the 5-year, that's not going to happen now. And there's a chance for more wins and results that could actually nearly end up improving or at least ensuring that there is no real drop. And that's important. But now it needs to be backed up next year and the year after. And that's the thing. Like, you know, we can celebrate great nights and they were bloody brilliant and I loved it, but I think there's a danger of complacency and people think, well, what a great league we have here. We don't have a great league. We have a league with loads of potential.
Yeah,
we don't have a great league.
Although
sometimes when in moments of celebration is when you can try and get things done. Whereas I think in the past, and it's been a tradition in Irish football through the Delaney years, moments of celebration was a reason to create a false pressure. What was that like? You know, creating the atmosphere after the
game
in 2016. Like we can sit back and go, well, this is brilliant for the league. We could, but what we really need to do is go, if we manage to do this with hardly any full-time academy staff, you know, crappy stadiums.
This is the point, Dan.
What can we do?
This is exactly the point. But if somebody like a Kieran Lucy type figure spends a bit of time on this with the clubs and say, we're going to come up with a plan here for the basically, you know, some sort of funding for academies across the country, they'll point out the fact, and this was pointed out by Long after the game. I was at Pauk Bowes when they played in the 19s, and Davoy, obviously Tierney and...
Andy Lyons,
they're splendid right back. Played that night, and Bowes were far from disgrace. But these players have really progressed as individuals since then, such that the three of them can now perform against a team that's regularly in the Europa League, a serious football team, and not look remotely out of place, not even like any way lacking confidence. And they're doing this in their home city, basically. They're doing this at home.
Yeah, no, listen. And
that's the template.
You're preaching to the government. Yeah, like you know, there's, I said, a very young league, and there's so much to advertise it, but it's still as relevant if they get hammered next week and all the clubs get knocked out next week.
Yeah. I don't
think that's going to happen. I'm just saying that doesn't mean, you know, league is still in the same place regardless of what happens in those games, and it's more a case of making a constructive argument for, okay, wouldn't it be great to deliver nights like this, you know, to our football grounds on a regular basis, and actually compose a strategy. And there was FAI strategy discussed, and I think the most interesting thing by far is the full-time academy stuff, because if you have a full-time academy structure and you're producing good players, then it's inevitable that some of these better players, and this is obviously the sadness of these European runs sometimes, that the better players do, the less likely that they're around the next season, but that it's not a catastrophic thing to lose them.
Yeah.
You replace them.
If Liam Scales goes for 600-700 grand, it is what it is. And he's developed in Ireland. He's been able to stay at home. And he's been, if he goes on to England or Scotland or whatever it is, that's fine. But like to see the Bows, like, was it the under 17s girls team, whatever, were like on the pitch last night, I think they were ball girls or whatever. Like, it's the academy can just be so much part of something better. But a lot more than just developing footballers, also about developing coaches, but creating a club ethos, creating a community, creating jobs in some areas that need jobs, and keeping kids at home, keeping them with their families, keeping them developing. And with Brexit, like, the opportunity is now.
No, it is, and there's a lot to go, and it's about not being decimated after a good run and then having to reboot again all the time. And that's the thing, that if Davoy eventually goes, is it Jamie Mullins's time? And Brexit has accelerated some of that, but there's still players going to try and go to, you know, Europe and go to other places. And I mean, you can't blame them in some cases, because they will get better facilities and
absolutely
and a lot of things that you're going to get here. We probably should mention the Scales thing. I mean, it is something that's obviously hugely hugely relevant to the news of the last week. I think Celtic are the clear front runners. There's other clubs mentioned, but I think Celtic is probably the most likely destination.
If you were Scales, Dan, would you go to Celtic or England?
But I mean, England is a country, Celtic is a club.
If he goes to England,
Are you going to send them with a ticket, like, to send them to the airport?
England.
And say, off you go. If he's
not going to, like, Morecambe, with all due respect. He's going to go to a big club. If Bradley is true that Premier League/Championship or Celtic.
Well, see, I think the thing is, there's a difference between interest and difference between a bid. Like, I'm aware of clubs that are interested, but the Celtic interest is definitely real. I think the way things work, like, his name will be probably, there'll be people getting phone calls now saying, who is this Scales lad the Celtic are looking at? If they weren't aware of him before, like, they will be now. I know the point you're saying, like, Celtic doesn't have the appeal that it has, that it used to have, sorry, maybe 10 years ago. And it doesn't necessarily, I'm not even sure, in parts of the country, it still has a massive appeal for young Irish lads, maybe not as much in others. But it's an absolutely huge club. And if you go to a European night, if he went to one European, a proper European night, I think there, I think that would be the argument to go there. But really, I think the argument, it's not about like Celtic or England, because that makes it seem like a sort of a, it's like a championship manager choice. Like who's bigger than who, and where would you like to go? The main thing is that the people around them are pushing him towards a club where wherever he goes, that they're sure he's going to play or be given a chance to play at least. And then if he fails, he fails. But he turns 23 in a club. He turns 23 later this week. He's not 17. He's not 18. He's not 19. So if you know where he needs to go is wherever the best move is to play football regularly and continue his development. And in a way, that's the most important thing rather than the size of the club he goes to.
Indeed.
There's no point going to a Premier League club if you're just going there to go, you know, and not play for an entire season. But of course, you may also get a contract that changes your life from that area. And much as we can talk again in those hypothetical terms of what you should do, a player in this league knows that if you're offered money at a 3-4 year deal on really good money, you have to probably take it because it may not come around again.
I think Luke McNally is a very good chance. You think Andy Lyons is a very good chance. Couldn't disagree. I think Scales, wherever he goes, like he's a player that could play, I think, in so many positions.
He's left-sided, and that gives him great. Joey O'Brien said that today. Left-sided centre-half.
Left-sided centre-half, who I don't think would be out of place playing centre midfield, to be honest. Fixtures this weekend. Derry City playing Drogheda Friday night. Drogheda...
You've got an absolute love for centre halves playing in midfield. Like it's an absolute passion for it.
It's not a passion. It's not a passion.
You're going to put Darragh O'Shea in there for Ireland.
I definitely think that's what we're talking about. But let's get to the fixtures.
Don't be fooled by he's got great ability, but
Scales can run with the ball. He's
Dawson Devoy is a midfielder. You know,
but so is Keith Buckley. Like, you know, and I'm not downplaying Keith Buckley. I think he's been amazing.
Scales for me. No, he's a left-sided player. That's his strength.
I think he could play in midfield. I do not in any way think he's going to end up in midfield in his career. I think that would be a surprise. I think left-sided centre-back is going to be, but he's a lot going forward. That, like, if you don't, I wouldn't pigeonhole as a centre-back in a two either, because he basically can't do much going forward. And he's a brilliant striker of the ball as well. Look at his goal this season. Anyway, getting back to the point, Drogheda obviously lost to Waterford. Waterford flying at Waterford play Bowes at the RSC. That's on Saturday at 2 o'clock. Sligo Rovers against Finn Harps, local derby. Finn Harps could badly do with something there, 7:45. And then Sunday, Shamrock Rovers, Bradley Keane, that they keep up playing games rather than messing around with fixtures late in the season, at home to Longford Town, 3 o'clock. Dundalk against St. Patrick's, fascinating game that, at 3 o'clock. In the first division, Bray Wanderers, Wexford, Galway United, Cork City. I'll be at that game. Great to see fans again. 800 in Terryland, UCD Shelburne, Treaty Cavendish. They're all Friday. Cove Athlone is Saturday. Dan, that is our lot. It's been a great week. I hope there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, let's hope next week is a better one. I mean, well, we have the two games tomorrow night, or it'll be tonight when most people listen to this. And then you have three games next Thursday, which is 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and 8 o'clock kickoffs. So you're going to have, I think it's the Pauk one at 6 o'clock. The Albania game is at 7 o'clock, and then Dundalk in Tala at 8 o'clock. So it's going to be a multi-screen thing. And, or, you know, people obviously, you know, some will obviously go to the game that's in Ireland, but much more people staying at home than they might have thought of to keep an eye on the developing stories. But hopefully all three ties are live, so there's a real need to follow all of them. But that's a little log jam to come your way. But we'll be previewing them next week. We will indeed.
That was in association with futureticketing.ie. Thank you for listening. Best of luck to Bowes, best of luck to Dundalk, best of luck to Shamrock Rovers.